Welcome to one of the most listened to music news podcasts in the world, SGNP, with your host, Darren Sutherland. Join us as we talk with industry leaders, artists, and entertainers about their faith, family, and careers. This is information you will not find anywhere else on radio, web, or in a magazine, but only firsthand on SGNP.
And welcome to the year-end edition of SGNP. Darren Sutherland and my co-host, Arthur Rice. Arthur, we're through with Christmas, headed into the new year. Man, it went by fast, hadn't it?
Well, I tell you, man, it just flew by. It just flew getting here, and then it just flew by once it got here. It's crazy.
Hey, well, today we're going to do a best of show. And we're going to do, Jonathan, my producer's got the names of the folks. Jonathan, hand me the sheet that we're doing the best of show. And it's more of the business side, Arthur, that we're going to throw out there to people, because there's so many Southern gospel artists and Christian music artists that listen to us. We want them to understand the business side. And from these four people here that we're going to play a little bit of, not their whole interview, and you can always go back to our website and hear the whole interview, they'll learn a lot. Folks like Ed Leonard, Maurice Templeton, Chris White, and Becky Simmons. You think that's four good places to start?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the great thing about this is, you know, I've been doing this a long time. And I still struggle with knowing what to do. And man, I wish I had this resource years ago when I first started. You know, boy, it would have just been so much easier. And so it's pretty cool to be able to access the information that we have in this age. So use it.
And folks, we're going to get – Arthur and I did one interview, and it didn't turn out. And we're going to get it done in 2019. With Daniel Ball, and he talks about social media. And if groups and artists and business people in particular are not using social media, where are they at today, Arthur? Are they getting it out there right?
They are. They really are. And I hate that one didn't turn out, and I think it was just the devil. And so we're going to work on that and make sure we get that out to you.
Hey, good news coming up in 2019. We'll get right to those interviews in just a second, but I need to share something before we go any further. 2019, we're going to be on radio in select markets, so you'll be able to hear the show in its entirety in select markets, and that'll include guests. We'll be able to play a little bit of music and have a little bit of fun. So if you listened to our mixtape last week and enjoyed it, which I know a lot of people did, you'll get to hear music and some fun stuff. Arthur, did you get a chance to listen to our mixtape last week? I know I did that on my own, and I told folks Arthur wasn't involved in this, but these are my favorite Christmas songs.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Did you ever think you would hear Lynyrd Skynyrd and the Kingdom Heirs on the same tape that you listen to?
Probably not, but you know, you can kind of get by with that at Christmas time.
You can. But anyway, so we're going to have great guests coming up in the new year. You can always check us out on Facebook at Southern Gospel News Podcast on Facebook. Just look at that along with about, I mean, we're close. We're closing in on about 10,000. Well, 9309 is how many likes we've got. 9,309 likes. And then we've got 9,413 people who follow us, which tells me there's 100 people who pay attention to what we do, but they don't want their names out there. You got any idea who that might be, Arthur?
Don't know.
I kind of think it may be some industry folks, but anyway, just don't want to be out there. But anyway, so that's that. Instagram, you can find us on Instagram, Southern Gospel News Podcast. You can also find us on Twitter, SGNP Podcast. And go to the website, www.southerngospelnewspodcast.com, and you can get our exclusive internet rankings. Now, what do we talk about internet rankings? You'll find out. We do our own little thing where we rank groups based on their social media following. It's not who has the number one song. It's who has the most social media followers in the world of Southern gospel and country Christian music. And it's a great little way to rank yourself. And groups, check it out, because some of you may be surprised who ranks at the top. It kind of surprised me when we first started doing it. And that's why I tell everybody, if they want to know about the internet, call Daniel Ball. He'll tell them.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anyway, our hotline number once again, 615-763-3862, 615-763-3862. Fun interviews coming up, more music coming up in 2019. Here's our interviews. We'll start it off a little Ed Leonard right here on SGNP. Hey, before I go any further today, I want to thank our sponsor, MyPillow. Not just our sponsor, but our friends, Mike Lindell and the guys at MyPillow. They've been a sponsor of SGNP since we've started. And for the holidays, they've got a great special. They're doing a four-pack offer. That includes two premium MyPillows along with two Go Anywhere pillows plus free shipping. And they're also extending their money-back guarantee through March 1st, 2019. And free shipping is only available for the four-pack offer. So call them today at 1-800-544-8939, 1-800-544-8939, and say, hey, look, I want that MyPillow special offer from SGNP, the four-pack offer. They'll help you out. I sleep on a MyPillow. Jonathan, my producer, has stolen my MyPillow before, so I had to get another one because he dingied it all up. I'm teasing. He didn't. But anyway, 1-800-544-8939. Use the code SGNP so they'll know where you ordered it from, or go online to MyPillow.com and always use the code SGNP. And welcome to SGNP. Darren Sutherland and my co-host Arthur Rice from up in Sevierville, Tennessee. Dollywood probably walking around the grounds between shows. Arthur, how you doing, my friend?
Good, good. Doing great.
Well, we're going to have fun today, Arthur. We got a special guest. We're going to Nashville and we're going to interview somebody pretty important that a lot of gospel music fans may not know by name, but I promise you they know some of the groups and artists he produced, don't you think?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Ed Leonard, President and CEO of Daywind Records, is our special guest today in our industry profile show. Ed, are you on the line, my friend?
I am on the line and ready to go.
Ready to go. How's it going up there in Nashville these days?
Well, it's good. It's a really great creative atmosphere, you know, with Music City kind of buzzing with all of the increased tourism and things going on downtown, you know, all the building and everything. It's just, it's a great time to be in Nashville, honestly, for all forms of music, but especially for gospel music.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Ed, tell us a little bit about your background and your family background. You've got enough kids to start your own TV show is what I've been told.
Yeah, I have 9 kids, which is I don't even know how we got there, but I certainly would not trade the world for any one of them. So it's been a different kind of life, but very neat nonetheless. And I've been working at Daywind now for 25 years. So I came out of the banking industry after college and worked in for a couple of banks in Chicago. And my mom had started this company called New Day Christian Distributors in 1981.
Yeah.
After working for Calvary Records. You remember Calvary Records?
Yeah.
They had the Hensons and the Telestials and a variety of other great groups, the Freemans. And so she really got to loving Southern Gospel, working for them and selling that music to Christian bookstores.
Right.
And then she went to work for Wind Chime, which had the Payne family and Heaven Bound, with their big song, Canaan Land Is Just in Sight, and, you know, several other artists as well, and did the same thing for them. She called retail stores and also radio.
Yeah.
And then when they decided they wanted to kind of back away from the retail store side, it was really what she loved. So she started New Day Christian Distributors, selling to Christian stores, and developed a real nice specialty in Southern gospel music, helping artists get their product into Christian retail stores. And that has built up over the years, and she's now in her 37th year,
yeah,
I believe, of operation. But early on, she realized that she needed her own product, you know, and so she started Daywind Records with the first artist being the Cumberland Boys.
I remember those guys. You remember those guys, Arthur?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, Arthur ought to be very familiar with that because they did at Opryland theme park what Arthur and his guys do at Dollywood.
Yeah.
That, you know, performing several days several times a day for the entire season. And I don't know, Arthur, you can tell me whether this happens or not to you and your label, but I would get a call from Depp Britt of the Cumberland Boys about October 15th of every year, just really upset with me about the things that we weren't doing for them. And I would look back and it was every year on the same day pretty much. that I would get this letter. And finally he confessed to me. He said, Ed, he said, after, you know, singing five times a day at the theater all summer long, you just get so worn out and so that you just need to vent at somebody. So I guess I was his venting target. But we had a great relationship with the Cumberland Boys. Does that sound familiar to you, Arthur?
That's true. And you know, part of that I think too is the same with us. Is you know, we're kind of removed from the norm of the gospel music arena, for lack of a word to say. But you know, and so we don't see a lot of the things that the record companies do. So we're the same way. It's kind of like, what are we doing or what's going on? And so I get that. I understand. So
all Chris has to do is send you back your reports of your number one songs, and
exactly.
That makes you happy, right?
It's like oh yeah, okay, now yeah.
So yeah, so anyway, I would get those calls. But so she started Day One Records. Cumberland Boys were the first artist, and then we started working with a group called the New Hinsons and the Steels, and had some really good success picking up, you know, artists that were operating independently at the time, and bringing label services around them. And you know, it's really, we've been so blessed to work with just some of the greatest artists out there over the last 25 years. And our publishing company too has been amazing, the growth that it's achieved.
Ed, what made you see that the banking business, I don't want to say wasn't for you, because you were successful in it in Chicago, but that you needed to come home and help your mother with Day Win and New Day? And what made you make that transformation?
You know, there were two things. Honestly, one was, I mean, the first and foremost, it was kind of a call on my life, because, you know, I loved business and I loved music. I mean, I grew up just loving music, and the opportunity to come home and do those two things in an environment where the end goal is to spread the message of Jesus Christ. I mean, how could your life be spent doing anything more worthwhile? And, you know, you can go and make a lot of money somewhere, but at the end of the day, you know, there's not enough money to fill the emptiness inside of you. But when you're working for Jesus every single day, I mean, what, you know, and I think it's sometimes hard, because you get in, and Arthur, you could probably speak right to this. It's very hard sometimes to see the impact that the things that you're doing are making on people. And you know, you get it somewhat on the front lines, Arthur, but you don't see even, you know, the people that are listening to your songs on the radio, whose lives are literally changed from something that they hear, or who you know, that's the greatest case, but on an everyday case, who just encouraged every day, you know, in their walk by the songs that they're hearing. And to be a part of making those songs, getting that word out, helping build ministries is really affirming and fulfilling.
Yeah.
And the other thing she did for early on was she started Day One Soundtracks.
Right.
So, I mean, if you think, I don't know how many million soundtracks we've sold of those things, but if you take the songs that are popular on radio and you give people in their small churches and big churches a way to sing those songs and spread that message even further, I mean, imagine the impact. So, you know, the Day One Soundtracks have been arguably as influential, if not more influential, as the record label.
Yeah, because
I would
agree with Arthur, absolutely, because they've crossed not only gospel lines but genre lines, from great songs like I Can Only Imagine to a lot of other things, I mean, that y'all have been able to do. Ed, give me, you've mentioned this is not only this is a calling on your life. Give me a wow moment when you've been there at Day Win, New Day, and looking at the business, and you just sat back for the first time, or maybe a time that you can recall, and you just said, wow, I mean, I can't believe that's just happened, or that's transpired, or something that you know could only be ordained in heaven, that had happened, that you can recall right off the top of your head.
I mean, I don't want to mention necessarily names, but just seeing transformation in the lives of artists, you know, where you're, you know, maybe things aren't going very well for the artist, and then, you know, 5 years later, they're just a changed person because God has made that change in their lives. And, you know, when you see, I'll just give you a couple of things, but when you see the power of a song for the very first time, like the very first time I heard My Name is Lazarus being sung live with Greater Vision, I mean, just the electricity that just came through that room, was unreal. I mean, just literally supernatural. I mean, of a higher plane that only Jesus can occupy. You know, just that kind of electricity. But there's, you know, all of those songs over the years. For me, I kind of look at it through songs, and you know, I wish I could have been there. And
yeah,
another Perry song that Joseph Habedank sings, If You Knew Him. You know, and Rodney Griffin songs throughout the years, and you know, the countless Karen Peck's you know, kind of growth over the past 10 years through with us, you know, Grammy nominated several times and Gospel Music Hall of Fame inductee, and seeing God really pour his favor on people who have knelt at his feet to serve him for years. That's just especially gratifying to me.
So what's wrong with living right anyway? Hey, I'm Karen Peck Gooch from New River, and you're listening to SGNT.
And end up with 8 cruises in 1 year.
Yeah.
And then in addition to that, the Singing News Magazine, and in addition to that, Chris White and I, we started Reach Satellite Network.
Right.
We bought it from Carol Magruder's brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Sacramento, California.
Yeah.
And then they got involved with the Quartet Convention and the Southern Gospel Music Association. And the first thing I knew, I was on traveling full time.
let's back up and talk about the Singing News. Yes, sir.
I started advertising the Singing at Sea on the back cover of the Singing News. I bought it from J.G. Whitfield.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one day Jerry Kirksey called me and he told me, he said, Maurice, we can't print the Singing News this month. And I said, what's the problem? He said, the post office won't take our check. And he said, the printer won't print it. I said, oh man, we can't do without the Singing News. I said, let me talk to JG. So I talked to Mr. Whitfield and I said, Mr. Whitfield, I'd like to buy half of the Singing News and keep it going. So he said, well, come down here and talk to me. So I went down and talked to him. And I took another CPA with me, and we stayed down there about 2 days and audited it. And, oh, he was broke. I mean, he was so broke.
Yeah.
He never would have got out. So I told him exactly where he stood. And he said, no, you don't know. He said, I'll pay for it out of my grocery store. Well, he never printed it. So I came back, and Charlie Burke, he's pretty sharp in figures. Charlie was really sharp.
Yeah.
So I called Charlie, and I said, Charlie, here's what I got. Here's what JG wants for it. Charlie said, forget all those numbers. He said, the name's worth that much.
Yeah.
He said, if you'll take it and sell it right, he said, you can have 150,000, 200,000 subscribers. So Charlie Burke's really the one that all I could see was how much money I was going to lose.
Yeah.
But it took me about a year till I got it to breaking even. And I got it back up in publishing, and then I put it into a magazine form, and it was in tabloid form.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I switched it over to magazine form. And then the subscription was $10 a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I met with about 50 groups, I guess, at the Quartet Convention, and I bought them all a steak, every one of them.
Smart man.
We had a steak supper, and I said, if you'll buy a page for a year for advertising, you pick the page, and I'll give you the page 3, page 5, page 7, page 6. And I sold about 25 pages right there at the Quartet Convention. Then I started giving the groups, if they sent me 10 subscriptions, they keep half of the money and send me half of the money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we went from, well, JG thought he had 20,000 subscribers, but when I got to looking at it, 15 of them were free because he owed them money for singing for him. He was trading that on advertising. But it just slowly grew, and the guys really, every one of them got behind me and made sure that the magazine was successful, because that's the only place people could find out where they were singing.
Yeah.
There was no internet, there was no web page. And if they wanted to know where the cathedrals were singing, the only place they could find out was in the Singing News magazine.
Right.
So that's how I got involved with the Singing News magazine. Then I moved it to JG, and I didn't have it before 5 months till JG. He called me and he said, I want to get out of it. He said, I need to put more time in my grocery store. So I bought the rest of it.
No doubt. No doubt. What was the industry's reaction to you buying it to JG at that time? JG was a promoter, and he knew a lot of the old time guys and knew them well. And all of a sudden, here comes a wheeling dealing business travel man from Boone, North Carolina, taking it over. Now, I'll be honest with you, I was good friends with the late Hovey Lister before he died, and folks like that, and they liked things a certain way. What was folks like that's reaction to somebody coming in that they did not know? Because they kind of like, as you well know, they like to keep things in the family.
Oh yeah, I'm sure they were probably sad and glad. But when I had that steak dinner over at the Quartet Convention,
yeah,
and I got to meet all the guys and let them know that I was in for it for the industry, for the long run, not for the next concert.
Yeah.
And then another thing happened. He used to have that big singing in Plant City, Florida. I don't know if you remember that or not.
Yeah.
JG had a big singing in Plant City, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was about 3 weeks before the singing, and all the groups said they hadn't been paid from here before, so they weren't going. So JG called me. I called every one of the groups and told them if they would come, I would bring the check. I would pay them, and then JG could pay me later.
Yeah.
And that made me a few friends.
Yeah.
And then if there was a group within 50 miles or 100 miles, I used to go see them, whether it was a church or a concert. And I got to know all of them mostly on a first-name kind of personal basis.
Right. Contemporary sprung up in the late 70s, early 80s, okay? And as you well know, there's more fights in churches over music than anything else. I mean, we can we can get through what alliteration of the Bible we want to use, but we can't get through what alliteration of music. What did you use?
Oh, till this day.
Yeah, till this day. You're exactly right. What definition did you use back in the day to decide for the magazine what would be considered contemporary and what would be considered Southern gospel? Because as you well know, the songs the Imperials sang in the late 70s or the songs Dallas Holmes sang in the late 70s wasn't considered Southern gospel, but yet in some circles, here we are in 2018, the Imperials would probably be totally Southern gospel. So what definition did you guys use back then?
Well, as you look back, the transition, look at the Beatles music.
Yeah.
It's not hardly even rock and roll now.
You're right.
That was one of the first big things that was coming in when I came there. they had a contemporary chart.
Right.
JG had a contemporary chart.
And had a black gospel chart too, didn't he? Did he have a black gospel chart?
He did.
Yeah.
And at one point he had a country music chart.
Wow.
Country gospel chart.
Yeah.
So the first thing I did, the very, very first thing I did, and I did this on the advice of Eldridge Fox.
Mm-hmm.
Eldridge Fox was one more sharp guy in gospel music.
Yeah, he was. Good man.
Eldridge Fox said, Maurice, you can't be all things to all people. He said, if you want to get into contemporary music, start a contemporary magazine.
Yeah.
If you want to get into black gospel, start a black gospel magazine.
Yeah.
He said, but I'm telling you, you're going to lose them. And I thought that made a whole lot of sense. So I just cut out every chart except the Southern Gospel Music chart. Then I put a questionnaire in the Singing News, said, what is Southern Gospel?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got a, if I got 1,000 responses, I got 1,000 ideas of what Southern Gospel music is.
Yeah.
So then I wrote an article and I said, I'll tell you what Southern Gospel music is. If I like it, it's Southern Gospel.
There you go. I like you. I like you.
That's really, there is no definition for Southern Gospel. It's
well, because, I mean, even to this day, it's as different as the day is long. I mean, you can have the primitive, who some people view as Southern Gospel, some people view as Appalachian Gospel. Or you can have the Booth Brothers, who some people, you follow what I'm saying? And they're as different as night and day, but yes, yet they both lift the Lord up. And that's why I always say to people, it's all about the gospel. You follow me? It's about the words to the songs.
Yep.
It's about the words to the songs.
And the words to the songs, and if you can understand the words,
yep.
That's one thing about the Kingsmen,
mm-hmm.
Gold City, and especially Glenn Payne with the Cathedrals.
Right.
If you couldn't understand every word they'd say,
mm-hmm.
he would make them boys say that word,
wow.
And you could tell every word they were saying. And you get into some of the other genres of music, and you really, it's kind of a bunch of noise.
Well, let me ask you this question here, and this is probably one of the biggest sellers of the magazine, and probably one of your biggest headaches when you were the publisher of the magazine, was the charts. Okay. How did y'all decide about the charts, and what's the history of the charts, and how did the charts metamorphose and that sort of thing? Because there's pros and cons about the charts, and you know the good and the bad and the ugly, but there's more good than anything else. Tell us about the charts and a little bit about that background and how all that came to be.
Well, that's the first question I had. I asked Kirksey, I said, Jerry, how do you decide who's a charting station and who's not? He said, if they play Southern Gospel music, and it won't be a charting station. I said, well, how much Southern Gospel music? 2 hours a week or 2 hours a day or how much? So I came up with a criteria. I don't remember exactly what it was. It was something like they had to play 20 hours of Southern Gospel music a week. They couldn't play 1 hour contemporary and 1 hour Southern Gospel and 1 hour contemporary. They couldn't mix it.
Mm-hmm.
So I found, it took me a long time, but I found through the radio promoters, people that they felt did represent Southern Gospel music.
Mm-hmm.
So then I went to the country music magazine in Nashville,
yes,
to see how they've selected their charts. And they would send out to a radio station, to your station, for example.
Right.
And they would say, give me the top 10 songs that you played last month.
Mm-hmm.
And some people kept records, some didn't. So you never know whether it's exactly right or not.
Right.
But if you have the larger the number, the more accurate it should be.
Right.
So we would give the number one song 10 points, the number two song 9 points, the number three song 8 points. Well, if you've got 50 stations sending in 10 songs, you could have 500 songs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we came up with the system, and I guess they're still using it. I don't know.
Yeah. What made you get out? What made you get out of the Singing News business? What made Mr. Templeton say, okay, I'm done?
Computers.
Computer. Yeah, it's a change.
I was on.
Yeah.
I was on a plane one time. I was coming back from a cruise in Miami. Mm-hmm. And this happened about the same time as 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't have anything to do with it. I was coming back from Miami,
mm-hmm.
and I was reading the Wall Street Journal, and it told how that the computers was going to bankrupt the New York Times,
mm-hmm.
and the New York Times had spent millions of dollars trying to establish web pages, and but they couldn't figure out how to get paid for their web pages.
Right.
And of course, I didn't know anything about computers, didn't know anything about web pages, didn't know anything about what they're talking about, except I could see, you know, if a New York Times in New York can't figure this thing out, how in the world is a mountaineer from Boone, North Carolina going to figure it out?
There you go.
Well, Jerry Kirksey had a son. He had two sons, Brett and Kenneth.
Yeah.
Kenneth made straight A's in computer science at Auburn.
Right.
And at our next meeting, I got Kenneth, and Brett was good in computers too. And then my son, he worked in computers.
Mm-hmm.
And I had all three of them at our meeting. And that, by that time, I had sold some stock to Gerald Wolf and Kenny Bishop and
right.
Several other people. And we had a meeting, and I said, fellas, tell me, here's an article I read in the Wall Street Journal. Can a magazine survive in the computer business? Brett Kirksey, Jerry's youngest son, said, no, sir, Mr. Templin, not unless you spend a lot of money. And I said, okay, suppose I spend a lot of money. How will I get my money back? He said, well, you could make people subscribe to it, but they wouldn't do it but 1 year. And when you got a magazine and there is no computer,
right?
If you send out 10,000 subscriptions this month, you know before you send them out you're not going to get half of them back. So you got to sell 500, you got to sell 5,000 new subscriptions before you make up for the old ones. And I sold the new subscriptions through the groups. They were yeah. they would sell the subscriptions for me.
Right.
But anyway, Brett.
And I remember that. Every group you ever heard, Mr. Templeton, after they'd get through with their singing, they'd stand up and they'd say, hey, come to our back table, $20, and we'll give you a subscription to Singing News. And you had those nice little the stands for the magazines, very professional, looking at everybody's table. I remember exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, and see, they didn't have any money invested in that.
Right.
And they could make as much off of that as they could a CD.
Yeah.
Because I let them keep $10 of it.
Yeah.
And I had them coming in. I mean, Tim Riley's wife, Barbara.
Yeah.
She would send me $200-$300 a week. I think he's making more off of me than he was.
You were just shouting off that midnight cry, wasn't you? Every Monday.
Oh yeah, sell them things.
There you go.
But anyway, when Brett Kirksey told me Singing News might last 2 or 3 more months, it hadn't been but just a little bit before that. Jim Cumby, he worked for Salem Communication.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to sing a new so bad he couldn't stand it.
Yeah.
And I was on my bush hog sitting out there one day, and I said, if Brett Kirksey's right, the Singing News can't survive.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm not smart enough to do all this stuff.
Yeah.
So I called Jim Cumby.
Yeah.
And I said, Jim, is Salem still interested in Singing News magazine? He said, we sure are, but said, you backed out on me one time. He said, the only way I will be interested in it is if you'll come to Nashville tomorrow and sign a contract that says, if I pay you what you want for the Singing News, you won't back out. And the next thing I knew, I was in Nashville signing the contract. And that's actually how I got out of the singing news, because I thought, and they're doing a good job, and I'm real proud of them. I just, to tell you the truth, I really don't see how they're hard to make it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you need a couple hundred thousand subscribers, number one, and number two, the number one seller of the singing news was the itinerary.
Yeah.
This is Darren, and if you're enjoying the 2018 Best Of Show today, with Ed Leonard, Maurice Templeton, coming up Chris White and Becky Simmons, you can always go to our website, southerngospelnewspodcast.com, and hear the interviews in their entirety. You'll hear folks like Jason Crabb, Russ Taff, Peg McCamey, Michael Booth, on and on and on. We've got some great ones. Karen Peck, Grant Gibson. So many great, fun interviews. You'll hear our tribute to the late, great Les Beasley, and these interviews in full and so many more. So join us each week, every Friday, on Southern Gospel News Podcast. Thank you for a great 2018. Now back to the show. What's the biggest change? If somebody says the biggest change, there's been a ton of change. What's the biggest change you've seen in the record?
Oh, you're so right. There's so many answers to that question. I'm going to say the biggest change that we've had to adjust to through the years, and certainly right now, is the way that music is delivered to the consumer. There are a lot of things that stay consistent, you know, the suit and the tie or whatever. The biggest change to me that I've experienced now, probably four or five changes, is the delivery system. Because I go back to the days of vinyl and 8-tracks.
Right.
Now the hottest, biggest, newest thing, obviously, is the streaming world.
Mm-hmm.
So I even asked that question last week to folks, what's next after streaming? And we all kind of concluded that maybe this is it. Whether it is or not, I don't know. Well, we thought CDs might be the final delivery system. Obviously, that's not working out to be the truth. And streaming may or may not be, but for the moment, that is the fastest growing delivery system that we have. So I would say that's a big change.
Yeah, you know, we see the change in it. But folks, you know, it's funny to me that our crowd, let's just be honest, the majority of our crowd, and we've had more than one person say this, if you look at the demo of Southern Gospel Music, it's folks 50 and above, okay? Now, we have some great young folks coming along. A lot of young folks love the music. A lot of middle-aged folks love the music. But if you go to the concerts, let's just face it, the majority of the folks are older. They love the CDs. How is Crossroads and Sunlight, how are you seeing those folks adapt to the streaming portals? We've got no problem. I mean, we're in a new portal right here in a podcast. I mean, if somebody would have told you 10 years ago, you'd be doing an interview on a podcast that would be heard on an Alexa machine sitting in somebody's house, you would have said, what? What is that? We have no idea what that is. You know, and
yeah,
they're talking about putting these Alexas in every new car next year. So when Chris White drives down the road in his new truck, he can say, Alexa, play Southern Gospel News Podcast, and it'll play it. How are you guys in the record side of the business seeing the over 50 crowd adapt to the stuff? Are they still wanting the CDs and the numbers? And just what's your y'all's thoughts on that?
Let me kind of put it this way. Okay. We as a company have always been, we've always tried to have a motto of let's create the curve instead of being behind the curve.
Great.
And that's what we've tried to do because if you go back a few years, we were the first company to ever create our own digital download store. And people told us we were crazy at the time to try to do that. I heard many people in the business said, you just put yourself out of business when you launch that store because you can't go from a $15 retail piece to a 99-cent piece. And I said, well, you may be right, but if we don't make this change now, we will be out of business because the digital world is going to take us by storm. Well, what happened, Darren?
Yeah.
The digital world took us by storm.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sitting there ready and waiting for it long before anyone else thought about it. That's the mentality we try to work with and have for years. We're having the same mentality on the stream. I'm going to guarantee, and I'll guarantee your audience, that if you ask me this question 5 years, well, you won't ask me this question 5 years from now, because you're going to see our demographic change with this time and change with this delivery system to the point that we are sort of like everybody else. Do we have a demographic that's going to hang onto the CD longer? Absolutely. And good for us that we do.
Yeah.
But there's other genres of demographics that are doing the same thing. Country music is still strong in CDs.
Yeah.
Are decline? Yes, yes. Everyone's seeing decline in physical and digital download sales. That's no secret. But music in general was up over 9% last year. In 2017, music sales were up for the first time in forever. And what drove that, or music income streams, and what drove that in part was the new streaming delivery system. I think that as our demographic gets accustomed to it, they will partake like everybody else, because I certainly remember the day when people screamed bloody murder that we were going to CDs and leaving the great standard set. You remember that?
Yep, I remember it. I remember it, no doubt.
And all we're doing is reliving that same era right now. If people are going to kick and scream against streaming, they're wasting their energy, because it's not going to be stopped.
You know, when we talk about change, changes in industry, changes delivery, changes the brand, change how you get yourself out there. I look at one of the new groups you guys work with, that basically, if we were talking about traditional gospel music and fitting in that mold of an NQC type crowd, or, you know, or something like that, maybe they're not there yet, but they're reaching outside the box through social media and promoting themselves in such a way that it showed up in our rankings. We do on our website, we do a gospel music social media ranking where we take their Facebook followings, their downloads on their page, their Twitter page, their Instagram. And the group I'm talking about is the Jordan Family Band, okay, who recently had Billboard's number one gospel music album, okay? Now, chances are, if you're a Cathedrals fan, if you're a Palmetto State fan, Hoppers, you may have never heard of the Jordan Family Band, Chris, because they're not in the typical mainstream of what, you know, the Gold Cities, the Kingsmen, that sort of thing. But they're selling a ton of product. How is social media evolving to affect the record side with folks like Jordan Family? Because, see, I think it's great. I think it's awesome because they're taking the music to a generation of folks. It's kind of like this right here, and I'll use this analogy. Back in the day when you might not have been living for the Lord, you may have been out shooting pool somewhere. But if somebody had walked in where you were shooting pool and they would have said, how many of you like gospel music, you may have raised your hand. You follow what I'm saying? They're taking that music to an audience that through social media. How is social media changing it all for us, Chris?
Well, it's everything, Darren. And, I mean, if you could just live in our building, in our corporate office for a day or a week, you would see the emphasis that we have on all of the art and make social media the train that it is. Randa Jordan has absolutely knocked it out of the park. She has found a way to communicate people through social media like very few artists ever accomplish. And you're right, it has paid off for them. And our daily, not weekly, but daily conversation with these artists is social media is social media. You've got to learn how to use it. And that's the other part, Darren, is learning how to use it, because it can be used very incorrectly.
Yeah.
So if you're not using it correctly, you're spinning your wheels. So a lot of what we try to teach is how to do that correctly. Now, we have younger guys in the business. I'm not one of them.
Yeah.
I'm way on down the road. That's why we have so many young people in our company that live and breathe this day in and day out, because they have to. We have to, as a company, be on the cutting edge of how to use these new tools that are making a tremendous difference
in our business and in the awareness and discovery of new artists. And I'll give you another example of you haven't asked the question, but I'll give you this example because it kind of does tie in.
Yeah.
When you see artists that are successful with social media, you will see all phases of their artistry increase.
Yeah.
Sales increase, awareness increase, discovery increases. Everything increases because they're taking a tool and they're correctly using it to affect the marketplace. And those artists that don't do that are going to absolutely be left behind.
You know, I'm amazed at some of the artists that you would think aren't social media active like you think they should be, but they'll blow your mind. Like, I'll give one of your artists some great credit. Eli Fortner, and you know Eli.
Yeah.
He's not a young man of a lot of words, okay? But we interviewed him a while back and was at a concert with him, and he was so inquisitive over the social media and the tools and the cameras and the mics and everything that we were using and how we were getting things out. And it's folks like that that's going to help their groups and their brands get to the next level and move on. But you're right about
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and thank goodness for Eli doing that because he understands.
Yeah.
Now, Peg, and I love her to death, have for years.
Yeah.
So they've been with us forever. Peg's like me.
Yeah.
She's way off down the road.
Yeah.
Peg and Rook are down the road. Eli, he's aware.
Yeah.
Of what the new world is like. And he is going to focus on that more than Peg and Reuben. And that's a good thing for the McCain. And I parallel that to myself. It's a good thing we have all these young people in our company that love digging into this day in and day out. Because we have to sustain and grow our success.
You
mentioned, and so does every artist.
Yeah, no doubt. You mentioned before we went on the air, and you mentioned Maurice Temple, and we were talking about him before we went on the air. Maurice, such a giant in this industry. I don't think people that love gospel music give him enough credit for what brought this industry to and how we miss him and his wisdom here to this day. What did Maurice mean to you, Chris?
Oh, man, you don't have enough time for that, Darren. Maurice, definitely, he's been my second father. We still talk every month. We had such a close relationship. We had a very unique relationship. And Jerry Kirksey was the same way in that we were best friends. Jerry and I were like brothers. Maurice and I were like father and son, and still are. But we knew how to separate the business from personal.
Yeah.
And just because we loved each other and respect what each other represented in our business, we knew how to separate that, and we did a good job of doing that. But Maurice Templeton was just, like I said, he was not only for me, he was the undergirding for so many artists in this business.
Hey, this is old Dennis Swanberg, and I'll tell you to listen to SGNP. It's good. It's real. Enjoy.
Becky, where do we go? You've seen gospel music change. You've seen the sound change. You've seen the travel schedules change. You've seen Sunday nights disappear in a lot of areas. Where are we going to see the growth? Where are we going to see where do we see in gospel music? And because gospel music, and for everybody that say, oh, gospel music's dying off, it's not dying off. All you got to do is look at our numbers on downloads on how many people's listening to this show. They're craving it. But where do we see? You see it firsthand. Where are we going in the next 10, 15, 20 years? I mean,
Darren, I've heard people say our music is dying for the last 30 years. It is not dying.
Right.
It's stronger than ever. Our crowds are growing. Our age group is getting younger,
mm-hmm.
which I have preached that for years. I'm so excited about that. I mean, I just think it's going to broaden. It's going to be, and believe you me, I love quartet music. I love, love, love it. There's nothing better than a bass singer and a tenor singer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some of these mixed groups, some of these duets, I mean, it's going to broaden just like other forms of music have.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only going to grow.
Yeah.
It is growing.
Let's just face it. As great as the Statesmen and the Blackwoods were back in their day, would they be hard to book in today's time, Becky, if they sang exactly the same way they sang in the 50s and 60s right now? They'd be kind of tough.
I think they would I think they would have their place in their fans.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, music music grows and times change a little bit, although the basics stay the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, no doubt.
You know, the words, the music, the story, the message, it all stays the same.
All right.
I'm glad we're appealing to a younger audience these days. I mean, that makes me happy.
I've got to give you an out on this next question, okay? And it's the last one I'll ask you because you're busy and I know you got to go. And before your phone rings 5 million times up there at BSA World this week after people hear this interview and say, I want Becky Simmons to book my group, how does BSA World choose, or not choose, but take groups under assignment to book them? What's kind of the method that you guys look at?
Well, the way I looked at it several years ago and the way I look at it now, I look at it two different ways.
Okay.
I love to take a new group, work with them. Today, they have to have some kind of demand, some kind of exposure. I don't have the time to help manage or create anymore. I love that. I used to do that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So now there has to be some kind of demand. There has to be some hit songs. There has to be something there. Although I say that, but on the other hand, I'm always going to have one or two struggling artists that I'm going to help.
Yep.
I think, you know, that's God's word. That's what we're supposed to do, is help people. So I'm always going to be helping somebody.
Toccoa Falls College in Toccoa Falls, Georgia. Since 1907, TFC, glorifying God through seeking and developing leaders who will impact the world for Jesus Christ. More information on TFC, call 706-886-7299 or visit them online at tfc.edu. That's tfc.edu.
And welcome back to SGNP. Some great information there from Ed Leonard, Maurice Templeton, Chris White, and Becky Simmons. You know Chris probably as well as you know any of those four folks, don't you, Arthur?
Yeah, yeah. And
Chris, shrewd guy, smart guy.
Smart. I mean, smart. People really, they don't understand how much he really knows about this industry, and well, not just our industry, but man, you can learn a lot, glean a lot from him.
Maurice Templeton as well. The mm-hmm. You know, a lot of folks have said this. A lot of folks have said that Bill Gaither saved gospel music. Quite frankly, I think Maurice Templeton had as much to do with saving gospel music, and nobody knows who he is except if you're an industry person. And Maurice Templeton put us at new heights. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And then Becky's probably had an impact as much as anybody, along with Ed Harper and others, Ed and Jeff Harper and Harper Agency, of putting gospel music groups and artists out there in the general public. And she keeps them going, you know, 365 days a year, 80 dates a year booked. And how many untold millions has she shown the world gospel music? So,
Tons of hard to calculate.
Well, man,
we don't have to calculate it. The Lord does.
That's it. Starting next week, man, we're going to have to hit, you know, the thing with the podcast has been we could just get on here and talk and have a good time. But starting next week, we got to hit a time. Man, it's going to be like us being on stage up there at the Kingdom Airs, you know?
Wow.
You know, we're going to hit a certain time, hit a break. Who knows? We'll be on radio all over the place. So be fun. We'll announce that next week. Make sure you take care of our sponsors, MyPillow and the others. Arthur, what do you always like to say at the end of the show?
Hey, what's wrong with living right anyways?
Not one thing. We'll see you in 2019 on SGNP. Happy New Year.
SGNP is excited you chose to listen today. If you'd kindly leave a remark and rating in the podcast remarks section, we surely would appreciate it. Please share with a friend or family member. Look for us on Facebook, Twitter, and our new website, SouthernGospelNewsPodcast.com. To advertise your products, services, concert event, or new project on SGNP and reach a 100% guaranteed number of people in your area, call Tim Newton at 770-874-3200 or email him today, tnewton@bgadgroup.com. Let us geo-target our ads for you, something radio nor magazine can do.
Hey, this is Darren Sutherland. Before I close, I want to thank our affiliates out there, WLJA in North Georgia, KWFC in Springdale, Arkansas, the new one, the Andrew Burnett Show, heard all across the country, and online, thelightatlanta.com, playing Southern gospel music online. We're adding affiliates every day. We're partnering with Ken and the folks over there at Gospel Music TV real soon. So we look forward to that partnership. If your gospel music entity would love to partner with SGMP, get a hold of us. It's real simple. Folks, here's the deal. We've reached out to literally every form of media in gospel music. If we've missed you, I'm sorry. But we've had great partnerships with folks like Paul Heil and others. If you haven't heard someone on the air, it's not because we hadn't reached out. We hope everyone is successful, no matter if they're a radio station, a magazine, a website, a group, whomever it is. God bless you, and let's make gospel music better than it was today, tomorrow. Easy enough?
The following ad contains shocking material. Listener discretion is advised. Is someone in your family playing a dangerous game of Russian roulette? Over 43,000 people die a year from drug overdose. 120 people a day. 5 people every hour. 1 person every 12 minutes. 88,000 people die every year from alcohol abuse. Over 240 people a day. 10 an hour. 1 person every 6 minutes. Somebody you know may be next. Learn how to help someone you love get away from the drugs, alcohol, and bad influences. With the FMLA, people can take a leave of absence from their job and still keep it. 800-980-1761. 800-980-1761. 800-980-1761. That's 800-980-1761.